This is the Kevin Miller Show, live, local, on News Radio 1020 KDKA.
Good afternoon, Kevin Miller, News Radio 1020 KDK. With us right now, Art Rooney Jr. in studio. Thank you for joining us, sir. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
Let's talk about your new book out. Of course, the Steelers in the news, always about the black and gold. Big game tonight. We'll get to that, of course. But I have to ask you, what's it like to be a Rooney in Pittsburgh?
Well, there was times when we snuck down back alleys because we, you know, my dad started the team in 33. I was born in 1935. My brother Dan in 32, I think.
Sure.
We went about 40 years without doing anything.
40 you know, years without doing anything.
Yeah, it was like Moses crossing the desert. You know, sure. 40 years until we, Chuck Noll came in and we, you know, won the Super Bowls. But being a Rooney in Pittsburgh, you know, you had identification. You know, they knew who you were.
Yes, sir.
And we were always cheap and dumb. And after we became winners, we were just cheap. You know? But I'm making fun of that, but it's pretty much the truth.
Sure. You know,
that, you're always kind of making mistakes. My mother was wonderful. She got a little technique. She always agreed with anybody. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, unless it was real vicious. She said, "Oh, she said, I felt the same way. You know, why didn't they do that or why did they do this?" You know?
Right.
But being a Rooney in Pittsburgh now, it's you know, you think you're a big shot. You know, and my dad used to always get on us about that. You know, you're not big shots. You're just regular guys. You're Northsiders. You
know? Right.
And, that's about what we. You know, I still feel. I've lived in Mount Lebanon for 47 years, and people say, well, what part of Pittsburgh are you from? I say the north side.
Right.
You know? But yeah, that's a big question at Rooney in Pittsburgh. And
it's like royalty. It really is.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, y'all may not think that way, but.
Yeah. I'll tell you one little thing that happened one time. I guess my mom or dad passed away, and we were at the funeral parlor, and we were driving into Pittsburgh, and it was out in Westview, where the funeral was, but we had two cars, just five boys, and you know, three in one car and two in the other, and one of my brothers from Philadelphia ran a stop sign. He didn't see it; he wasn't being smart aleck, and the cops pulled him over, and we slowed down in the other car, you know, just stopped until he got his ticket, and the guy came up, looked in the window, talked to him, pulled his license out, handed out, and the guy handed it back, shook hands, and waved them on,
mm-hmm.
you know, and does have its pluses. That was a very moving moment, though, because one of my parents had passed away.
Sure,
as I say, we had some trying times too, you know, and
but there seems to be a responsibility too, because if y'all ever got into trouble, it'd be in the papers,
big time.
Yeah,
big time. I mean, little trouble,
right?
Well, you're always trying to avoid, you know, go to certain places, do certain things, and. Yeah, because you really would attract attention.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good question, by the way.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate
that. I'm sorry. I probably didn't answer that one good enough, but, it really caused me to think, you know, because you know, we grew up. It was not, you know, we're all old fogies now. You know, you're talking about, 50 years ago, you know, and the north side was still the north side.
Right.
There was a big scrap heap over there, bunchers, scrap yards, you know, and railroad lines going through there.
Right.
But, of course, now you have PNC Park. Three Rivers was there. Three Rivers Stadium was right where my grandfather has a saloon.
Wow.
Yeah. And, in fact, the initial ballpark over there, the Pirates played in, my father always said that they had steeples on the initial, the early ballpark. Dad said one of the steeples blew off and went right through the window of his dad's, you know, barb. And, yeah, so we're not carpet baggers. We just didn't show up. You know, we've been here for a long time.
Well, Art Rooney Jr. with us. Let's talk about the title of your new book, The Story of Art Rooney and His Clan. Now, you're going to have to pronounce this for me, sir.
Yeah, it's Rouani.
Rouani.
Rouani. And the thing that happened, I figured my dad wouldn't want me hustling this book by using his name. And so I had Rouani, you know, the Gaelic for Rooney. And the picture on the front is my dad and his brother Dan playing minor league baseball with the Wheeling Stogies. And they have the greatest, the picture was by Merv Corning, a great artist, a great sports artist. and it depicts my dad and his brother in their uniforms, and they had the greatest game faces. You look at that thing, and boy, they look like they're ready to take the world on, and they did too. They were the toughest guys in the league and the two of the best players in the league. And I wasn't even going to sell this book. I was just going to give it to some libraries and friends and relatives. I didn't think I could sell it. And you have readers, you know, guys read the thing and that. And they said, you know, we think you could sell this. And so I got a very limited number to sell. And my wife got me and she said, that cover on the front with that name, Ruani, and two baseball players, and you're supposed to be football guys. And, change the book around. The back cover, the back rear cover on the book is a picture of my dad that everyone knew. It's him,
the chief,
with his Irish cap on and a cigar in his face. And I says, no, I said, I'll do what he would like. And I know he'd like the picture of his brother and him when they're baseball players. And people tell me now they don't know what it means, Rooney. But I did what I thought the chief would like. And, and by the way, you never called him the chief to his face. Now, you could call him that, you know, as a media guy, but the family and the friends. I mean,
nobody called him chief, huh?
No, the people close to him never called him because he kind of was taken back with that a little bit, you know.
He was a humble guy.
Yeah, he really was a humble, and he would tell you himself in the early years he had a lot to be humble about. You know?
412-333-KDK. Art Rooney Jr. with us. Kevin Miller here at News Radio 1020 KDK. I really don't know where we should begin when we're talking about your new book, sir, and talking about your life. And let me just talk about the attachment your family has here to this city. What does this city, this area, the people mean to the Rooney family?
Well, my father had a lot of chances to move to other towns, you know, take the team with him. And he always would, at least told me and my brothers, that he said, you know, you're Pittsburghers, you're Pittsburgh guys, and you keep this team here unless you can't make a go of it. He says, then you're going to have to do something else. But he was the biggest critic of Pittsburgh and the people in Pittsburgh, and he loved every one of them. Everyone was family. You know, he had a knack of talking to people for 5 minutes, and they would make you feel like he knew you all your life, all the, you know, and he had a tremendous memory for names, and he'd get some part of the name, the first name, the last name, the nickname,
sure.
and he had the ability when he was talking to somebody, just casually with him, like 2 years later, meet him and know something about it. Remember where the conversation ended up.
Right.
Danny Murtaugh was with the Pirates, gave me that impression. He sort of had that. Maybe that's Irish. I don't know.
Okay.
But I think I got away from your question. That's one of my problems.
That's okay.
On rambling.
That's the great thing about KDK, and we don't have 30-second sound bites. Yeah, we have an hour.
Yeah. But, you know, I keep rambling on. But
I ramble, too.
Yeah. But, when I was writing this book, I had a great, great editor, a guy named Roy McHugh, was a fabulous, famous writer here in Pittsburgh and sports editor. And he helped me out, and he said, did you ever hear of James Joyce? And I said, oh, yeah, we had him in school. He was a great Irish writer. He said, you're a little bit like James Joyce. He said, you're Irish. He says, you use a stream of consciousness, you know, when you write. He said, but... Joyce was brilliant. You're not near brilliant. He said he always got to the point. You never get to the point.
Right.
You know, keep on going around and around. You know,
we'll get back to that point, if that's all right with you, sir.
Anything you want.
Yeah. Okay, coming up at 412-333-KDK, we'll hear more from Mr. Art Rooney Jr. Ruani, is that the correct pronunciation?
Good enough.
I have trouble with that. That's why you need to correct me, sir. Here at News Radio 1020 KDK.
Kevin Miller may be dropping the pounds, but he still has an appetite for politics. The Round Mound of Sound is live and local. News Radio 1020 KDKA.
After 12, Kevin Miller with our very special guest, Art Rooney Jr. His book, Ruani, we're talking about the Rooney family history here in Pittsburgh, and going back to your father, Art Rooney, the chief, I just would watch him with those players, and all his players loved him. That personal attachment he had, not only for those players, but again, for this city. It's interesting, and you talk about you don't get to the point. I'm not either, but let me let me just say this. You said that he loved the city, but he was the biggest critic of the city.
Oh, yeah. You know, these Pittsburghers, he says they're all the same. You know, he talked about the Irish the same way.
Okay. Well, keep going, sir.
Yeah, well, but he really was a Pittsburgher and a North Side guy, and like I say, he just liked to talk to people. He sincerely liked people. You know, you
right.
could never make it to your airplane with him. He would walk through the I'd be carrying his bag,
right,
and would be going to the airplane, you know, the gate, and he would talk to everybody. In fact, I'll tell you kind of an interesting story. When my father was dying, he was over in the Mercy Hospital, and the family was all there, and we were they fenced off a certain section of the dining room, you know, so we didn't have a lot of people just coming up and visiting. And this person in the hospital came up and said, there's a man here that wants to see you. And he said that he's one of your dad's very best friends. And he gave the name, and I was there. My brothers were all there. And I said, Dan, I said, do you know this guy? And he said, no, Jerry. I don't know who it was.
Sure.
And so we said, well, bring him over. So he came over, and he's a black guy. He's a very nice-looking guy, and he lived close to the hospital. And he said, your dad, and he knew me and Dan. And he said,
right.
Your dad was really one of my real good friends. And he's talking, and finally I find out he was one of the porters at the airport, you know, carrying
sure.
your bags and that stuff. And he says, every time he came out, he would, you know, talk to me. He says, I'm here for you, whatever you want to do.
Right.
You know, want me to pick people up, drop them off. And so we talked, we introduced them to all the brothers and all the wives and that stuff, and they had them sit down with us for a while, and he got up and left. But that was the secret that he had. And he didn't do it on purpose. You know, he wasn't putting a phony act on. When he talked to you, he talked to you.
Right.
And he knew who you were. He probably knew your grandma.
Sure.
Your granddad. And he loved to go to he thought it was a duty to go to the funerals, and especially the wakes. And he'd go into the funeral parlor, and they usually had some other person, you know, he'd go to the other rooms, you know, and he'd walk in and he'd sign the book and go talk to the people. And they were amazed. They said, Uncle Jack always said they knew Art Rooney.
Right.
He says, and here he is. He didn't know him at all. You know, he may have, but he, you know, he just went in to give his condolences to somebody.
And sure.
It was a phenomenal thing. My mom died. It was at Devlin's funeral home, and he insisted on, in lieu of flowers, send money to, you know, some charity or something
sure.
like that. And he said, let everybody send flowers. Tell them all to send flowers. And he says, all these florists around town are all friends of mine. He says, when I kick the bucket, he says, I want them to get a good score off this.
Wow.
And he did. But when mom passed away, you know, and he walked by this, the room where this
sure.
somebody was in there, and nobody was in the room except this one fellow. It was this guy's son, and my father did know him. And he said, gee, I wasn't going to lay out Dad, but I thought that maybe a couple of the old firemen, the guy was a fireman, would want to come by and say goodbye. And so my father went down to your mom was, and he told the funeral director, he said, take all the flowers that are spilling over up into Jack's casket up
right,
there.
Right, the firefighters room.
Yeah, yeah. And anybody would come in, like Joe Green or any of these people. He said, an old friend of mine's laid out up there. He said, his son's a real nice guy. Go up and say hello to him and sign the book.
Right.
And by the time it was over, that room was filled with flowers.
Right.
He had a book, you know, the condolence book signed, you know, Joe Green, Jack Lambert,
right.
Chuck Dole, the Rooney Boys, and
sure.
He wasn't putting on a show. He was the master of the random act of kindness.
Which, you know, I guess they call that's old school, sir, but you, Art Rooney Jr. with us, Kevin Miller here at News Radio 1020 KDK. When you look at that, I mean, your dad did that. My grandmother did that. I don't know if that's lost today, but what a magic... thing that is for the random act of kindness.
Yeah, he was just a master of that kind of stuff, and but he knew everybody,
right? And everybody knew him.
Yeah, I heard one the other day. I was at a book signing, and a lot of people walking by, and it was over the Heinz, you know, sports museum
sure.
over there. And this guy stopped and just went to shake hands, and he said, "Your dad really saved my hide one time." And I says, the fellow was about my age, 72, 73. I said, "No kidding." And he's holding up the whole line telling
right.
this story. You know? He said, "I was just a little kid, just about old enough to take a streetcar." And he says, "And I took a streetcar from Pittsburgh. It was way out in Edgewood or something like that." He says, "It's too far to walk, you know." He said, "They got to Pittsburgh and ended up on the north side." And he says, "And it's getting later, so I went to the get the bus or the streetcar to go, you know, go back home." He said, "Again, it was too far to walk." He says, "And some of the big kids got me and beat me up and took my quarter off me." Well, that was the north side too, you know.
Sure.
And he said, "This guy was pretty well dressed. Came up and he said, I was just crying my eyes out." And he said, "What's wrong, kid?" He said, "Oh, the big kids stole my quarter off me." He says, "And I live too far away to walk home." And so he said, "This guy was." You know, gave me the quarter, but he said the big thing was he stayed with me till the next streetcar came.
Sure.
So the big kids went steal his money again. He says, "I got on the streetcar, and the some of the other people who had been waiting with him said, hey, do you know who that guy was that took care of you?" And he says, "No." He said, "That was Art Rooney." Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing when you think about this.
Well, if you take it as a lifetime, you know, all those little things were a lifetime, and, you know, they build up, you know.
Sure. And his attachment not only to the city but to the team that he got. How did he? You know, we've heard the story so many times, but we never get tired of it. How did he get the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, he had semi-pro teams that were very good. He always claimed the semi-pro teams could beat some of the NFL teams, and Pittsburgh always wanted a NFL. You know, the NFL wanted a franchise in Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh was a rail hub. I didn't realize that till later. I knew it was a rail hub, but I didn't realize why. But it was an easy place to get to from New York, even Chicago in the west, Detroit, Green Bay. I don't know if Green Bay is easy to get there anyway, but it's besides airplane. But Philadelphia, Washington, they're all overnight trips, and some of them maybe not even an overnight trip. So the league wanted somebody in Pittsburgh, but they had a thing called the Blue Laws, where you know, you could not play you could not have an amusement thing on Sunday, you know, you know, because that was the day the people were supposed to go to church and spend with their families. Looking back at it, it wasn't a bad idea. But my dad was a political type guy, and he helped get the law passed, you know, to change the law.
Sure.
And so they could start a game like at 1 o'clock, but it had to be finished by 4:30. You know, 1 o'clock because the church services would be over, 4 o'clock so people would go home and have dinner with their families. And that was a real big deal because the movies weren't even allowed to open.
Sure.
And it was kind of an interesting aside that my dad got a free pass to the movies in Pittsburgh all his life. In fact, he always gave it to me because I like movies.
Right.
In fact, a year after he died, I kept on getting it for a year. They gave me a year to stay on the movie passes.
Sure.
But once they did that, then he was able to get the you know, the franchise in Pittsburgh. And he always said, I paid $2,500 for it. And he said, if I would have given an argument, they would have given it to me free because they wanted a, you know, team in Pittsburgh. Another interesting little side to that is the number of referees, you know, game officials from Pittsburgh, because they could jump on a plane. They all had regular jobs.
Sure.
But they could jump on a plane Saturday evening and, you know, get to the three-fourths of the, maybe all of the teams the next day, you know,
sure.
an overnight train.
Art Rooney Jr. is with us. Mr. Rooney is with us. Mr. Art Rooney Jr. is with us. Ruwani, I keep it. Ruwani is the title of the book.
You're pronounced better than I do now.
Well, that's okay. Kevin Miller, News Radio 1020, KDK.
Kevin Miller.
You have reached the Kevin Miller Show. To continue in English, press 1. To continue in Spanish, learn to speak English.
The Kevin Miller Show. Kevin Miller. News Radio 1020, KDKA.
Well, 12:32, News Radio 1020, KDK. Art Rooney Jr. with us here, talking about his new book, Ruwani. By the way, your website, sir?
Yeah, artrooneyjr.com.
artrooneyjr.com. You know, off the air we were talking about this. I'd love to share it with the audience. What we're talking about the team today is great. It's terrific. The passion, we're going to see that tonight at Heinz Field. But for me, it'll always be, you know, Terry, Jack, Mel. Those guys were magical.
They certainly were magical. And, you know, I know when Chuck Noll came in with us and he gave his description to the Scots, these Scots, or saying myself and Bill Nunn, of what he was looking for. And he says, you know, just get me the great athlete, the great athlete, he said, who is coachable, you know, and has some character and toughness, he says. But then it's up to me and my coaches. And he sure as heck did that. We went out and following his description, what he was looking for, we found some real great athletes, and he and his assistant coaches never did too much to mess them up. And boy, I know when they showed up in Pittsburgh, they were just—I remember all those 21-year-old guys, 20-year-old guys—and they're just bright-eyed and, you know, tough guys and you know, pretty smart. No dumbbells, no old dumbbells, and you know, they just went out and got them together, and they didn't make too many mistakes. And
sure,
just 100%er, and boy, they weren't the biggest guys in the world.
Right.
You know, I think Jimmy Clack and Dwight White and Webby and you know, they were all that Super Bowl, that first Super Bowl. They were you know, like 225 pounds.
Right.
You can imagine that. And,
right.
Gee, we had another great player, Larry Brown, that was a big, tall guy that was a tight end. He started the one first Super Bowl as a tight end and ended up the last Super Bowl as an offensive tackle.
Wow.
And boy, were they great guys to be around.
Well, and you talk about scouting these guys. I mean, Lambert from Kent State.
Yeah.
Bradshaw from Louisiana Tech.
That's right.
Right. I mean, these weren't the big college programs.
No. Once Noel sort of set the standards and that stuff, you went where the players were. We had the Blesto scouting organization who would identify players. And but we then knew what we were looking at.
Right.
You know, and we didn't have a lot of scouts. It was just Bill Nunn and myself. And, you know, we just went out and beat the bushes and came up with them and, you know, got guys that were maybe too small for other people, but, you know, had the height and the physical potential to get bigger.
And the work ethic.
Yeah. Well, that was part of it. You couldn't have anybody that didn't have a strong at work ethic, you know. And it was really an experience of a lifetime. I think we went from 1969, when Chuck came in, until 1974, perhaps. And I know I'm kind of, you know, patting ourselves on the back. It may have been the best six consecutive years in the history of the NFL of bringing in football players. I think, the 1979 team that won the Super Bowl,
right.
We did not have one player who, as a pro, had ever worn anything except the black and the gold.
Right.
And that was never done, and with the structure of the league now, it'll never be done again. And that's one thing I was kind of proud of, because my dad gave me a job. And, of course, Noel was the main gazumbo, but my part of the job, it was done as good, if not better, than anyone ever did it before, and maybe not again, you know. But I was proud of that, because you always want to make your, especially a dominant type guy like my dad, you wanted him to have a little bit of pride in you.
Well, you go back to scouting these players, and then all of a sudden, it happens. 40 years before that, people loved the Steelers, but they became winners, and those players were part of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we had good players back in the old days, like
sure.
Bill Dudley and Whizzer White and Ernie Stotner and Albie Nickel, and of course Jack Butler is one of the best. And we never had enough of them. Yeah, you know, we were always on short paper, so to speak. We always, you know, didn't have a lot of money to have a taxi squad or keep guys with us, and they'd migrate to other teams or just get out of football. But when the television was really the thing that did the trick, and then going into Three River Stadium, you know,
right.
you got something and you had a place to showcase it.
Well, and you know what, I tell this to the folks ad nauseum here, they always say, oh, Kevin, all you care about is what happened in the 70s. But I have to go back to, you know, everybody wants to do well financially. We all do. We all want to make money. And I understand that athletes today get a lot of money. But for me, those guys were closer to the people, because some of them had off-season jobs.
You own an awful lot of them.
Yeah.
I think Jack Ham has the same off-season job he started out with.
Right.
But, yeah, that's the truth. They really did. But now the money's so big and we have these off-season camps, it's pretty hard for them to have any off-season job.
Right.
The game, the athletes haven't changed, the athletic temperament, and the great athletes and the guys who are willing to work and develop themselves. But the environment has changed greatly.
Yeah, it has. You look at tonight's game. What do you think the fans will see? Again, I'm so glad football season is back, both college and pro. Yeah. But, I mean, it's preseason, but everybody's fired up.
Yeah, especially a town like Pittsburgh, they get real fired up for the preseason games. And I remember we used to call them exhibition games, and the newspaper guys started to catch on to that and said, well, how can you charge the same money for an exhibition game? So the league changed it and says preseason, and I got with that. I never call them an exhibition game anymore.
Sure.
But they were big games for the Scots, and mm-hmm. the coaches, of course, too. But used to love to see the young players, how they were doing. And if some kid was a second-year guy or somebody had been hurt, and the special teamers and things like that, that they were always big games for us. And we always stuck around, to the end of the game because that's when the kids all got in, But Noel would play a lot of players. So some teams in the old days, they'd play they'd play the vets to get them in shape.
Right, you come into camp to get in shape.
You came to camp to get in shape. But nowadays they're in shape. But I think that, you don't go into these games with the idea of losing or just showing up, the games with the Eagles are always good. They were the cross-strait rivals, and we used to play them. They were in our division. And now you only play them now and then or in a preseason game. But it always ends up a fight or something. I don't know if it's that interstate thing or what it is, but they always end up in a fist fight or somebody getting thrown out of the game. But my dad used to own part of the Eagles. I don't know
right.
if you knew that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, he sold the Steelers and then bought part of the Eagles and then made a deal with the guy he sold the Steelers to was Lex Thompson. He was the guy he inherited money. Folks were in the steel business. But Lex wanted to be in the big city, so he traded the Eagles and the Steeler franchises, and my dad got back in tie-in with Burt Bell was his partner and Barney McGinley. And of course, Burt Bell went on to become the commissioner in the National Football League.
What was your dad's relationship like with Pete Rozelle? I mean, arguably the greatest commissioner of all time.
Yeah, well, he my dad's partner and very, very close friend was Burt Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And but my dad was older, when Pete came in. And Pete had been a PR guy at San Francisco University and then went to the Rams and worked his way up from PR to became their general manager. And, again, he was only about 32, 33 years old and when Bert died. And, he was willing to move to New York. They had other candidates that went to stay in Los Angeles or
sure.
San Francisco. And he really knew the media well. And my dad had a very, very, very close relationship with him. But the guy that was really close to him was Dan,
mm-hmm.
my brother Dan, because they were both young guys and had known each other.
You look at, and again, going back to your book, Ruwani, by the way, your website one more time, sir?
Yeah, artrooneyjr.com.
Do you ever think you'd be a .com?
I didn't even know what .com was.
Well, anyway, as we go on with this, you go back to the commissioner and Pete Rozelle and everything else and how the league has changed. And before we get to that, possibly the greatest rival for the Steelers, who would that be? Would that be the Browns?
Oh, the Browns, yes, the Browns, the Browns, the Browns. And I remember Jack Butler and I, Jack's son, drove us over to the Browns game once, the Steelers and the Browns in the afternoon. And we're leaving the game, and I guess they saw the fans saw our Pennsylvania,
that was plate. The old Riverfront Stadium, right?
Yeah, and saw the plate on the back of the car, and some guy mooned us.
Well, that's
and,
Cleveland.
Yeah. So my pal Jack Butler said, he says, "Gee, aren't they horrible?" And I said, "Yeah, Jack, they're just like us." They used to come to Pittsburgh and on the buses.
Right.
We would go over there on the buses and. And the word was that my dad made in the Pittsburgh police chief made a deal with the mayor of Cleveland, the Cleveland police chief that the drunks, unless they were horrible, you know, would not be thrown in jail. They'd be thrown back on the bus. And the only time that they would be getting any trouble if the bus driver was drunk. Yeah. And that happened too. But
different times,
there was,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, but a different fan. You know, one of the fans could drive the bus.
Right. You know? Now, going back to, you know, so much of what we know about the Rooney family documented in your book, Rooney, is about football. But besides football, you know, what did your dad do? And what do you and your brothers do besides football?
Well, my dad, you know, was a probably the best horse player, gambling on horses, in the 20th century. And I have no doubt about that. I don't know anybody who would be better than him. He was.
He could figure that out.
He quit. I know, you know, that reading that racing form, you know, he never taught me. He never wanted me to be, or any of us really to be in that. That's sort of ironic. But my uncle, you know, my dad's brother, Uncle Jim, and a couple of his friends taught me to read the racing form five times. And I could never – I'd learn how to do it,
sure.
And then I forget. It's always confusing to me. You know, you ask about a computer, well, I couldn't even read the racing form.
Right.
But he was a master of that thing. He used – the night before he would go to the races, he'd get the racing form or the Morning Telegraph, and he had a great big grease pencil. And he'd take a cigar and start chewing on a cigar, and he got a wastebasket, and he filled it up with you know, scrap papers and that stuff, you know, old newspapers. And he was an old baseball player, you know, so he would chew the back and spit in the waste can. And he would, you know, study this racing form and go over it and over it and over it. And when he had a chance, he would go to the racetrack at 5 in the morning when they worked out the horses, you know, and clock the horses.
Right.
You know, he would have a clocker. You know, they have a guy that did that, you know. So
that was his passion.
Oh, yeah, that was, the baseball and football,
right.
But that's how he made his money.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the biggest schemes. He knew all the schemes. He knew all the schemers. And one thing about him he was able to do, he stayed above these guys but never belittled them. You know, they all thought that he was one of them.
And, right.
He never put people down here, made them feel uncomfortable. And he was anything but a goody-goody two-shoes. He was very puritanical.
Right.
You know, but...
But he could hang with the schemers.
Well, he could hang with all those guys and make them feel like that they were decent guys. He had a knack of making everyone feel like they were decent,
mm-hmm.
even the people that weren't decent. You know, he could see the goodness in them. But I got away from your question. But that's how he made enough money to
keep the team going.
Keep the team going, and you know, to buy it, and you know, he just had that beautiful skill and something, you know. But, and unfortunately, it was not a skill that was inherent to pass
right.
on to your sons. I know I had nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to kid myself and say, "Well, I can pick football players." Well, that was nothing. Very little similarity, you know, what he could do.
Sure.
Know? And
but you had a good run.
We had a good
yeah.
run. Yeah. We, in fact, one of our my brother Tim did a pretty good job of breeding horses, buying them, selling them, breeding them. And Dad was always very proud of him for that. And I remember we had a lawyer one time. It was our partner, a guy named McCartney from Philadelphia. And Dad was making a big fuss over Tim and his horses. And after the meeting was over, and he said, no, he didn't wait until after. He brought this up at the family meeting with the boys. He says, "Well, Art," he said, how would you like to be able to, you know, put Franco Harris and Terry Bradshaw and Joe Green and, you know, Lambert and Jack Ham, you know, put them into the horse business if they were horses? How do you think you would have done with them?"
Uh-huh.
And, boy, I was very proud of that because he, you know, because I was – those guys I just mentioned there, they were all Kentucky Derby winners.
Oh, yes, they were. More coming up with Mr. Art Rooney Jr. and Kevin Miller at News Radio 1020 KDK.
Live and local with a round mound of sound.
I thought it was Kevin.
The Kevin Miller Show on the Voice of Pittsburgh. News Radio 1020 KDKA.
1249 News Radio 1020 KDK. With us in studio, Art Rooney Jr. I haven't given out the phone numbers if you have a question for Mr. Rooney. Author of Rooney, you can go check him out at artrooneyjr.com. 412-333-KDKA. The time has flown. We've got a little time left. You look at the future of the league. How do you see it playing out?
The NFL?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's gotten so big.
Sure.
I hope it's not top-heavy. You know,
right.
And, I just saw a thing the other day that they're going to try to police the parking lots.
Right. Imagine doing that in the old days with Cleveland-Pittsburgh.
You just took the words out of my mouth. I remember a friend of mine that had been one of our players, and he was at the Sewer-Cleveland game, and he was leaving, and there was two of the Cleveland fans that got loaded, and they were using very obscene language. And my pal told them, they said, "Hey, shut up in front of all these girls and that stuff." And they said, "Oh, we got a preacher here." So now they got away from the they didn't want any problems.
Right.
So they got down in the – we were Three Rivers, too, where the parking lots were. And here these two guys came up again.
Right.
And they didn't know that they were – fooling around with one of the toughest guys ever played for the Steelers.
Right.
He decked both of them. It was Jack Butler.
Wow.
Number 80.
That was something. You know, we talk about those great Steelers. You know, we've talked about Bradshaw and Webster and Lambert, but, you know, Swanee and Stallworth, that team, those two wide receivers were just insane how they would just jump up and get the balls and everything.
Yeah, Swanee was one of the greatest jumpers I've ever seen in the focus and concentration.
Right.
You know, it was just uncanny. And, he was willing to go over the middle and get the ball.
Right.
That was for a little guy to get killed. And I remember one of the most dramatic things I saw is when he got cold conked and Joe Green went out and carried him off the field. You know, and Stallworth was just a guy who got better and better and better.
Yeah.
You know, and the catch he made in the Super Bowl in 79, played in 80 was for the 79 Super Bowl. The over-shoulder to catch and just broke the back of the Rams. It was over then. Yeah.
What I love, and you know, for me, sir, Chuck Knoll doesn't get enough credit. Terry Bradshaw doesn't get enough credit for those four wins. I loved, and with all due respect to the other quarterbacks, when it was third and one and he'd hit Swanee long. He didn't go for the easy thing. He just went deep.
That's right. Well, he had the greatest arm in football.
Yeah. And you don't hear about that, but, I mean,
no.
Terry Bradshaw, you know, very underrated.
Yeah, I think so. You know, how about Knoll?
They
made the coach of the year once or never, and they were voting for the greatest coach of the Super Bowl.
Sure.
All the Super Bowls. And he went four of them, and he came in second, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys voted for him first, but he came in second. And he truly was a tremendous coach. What he did here, in Pittsburgh was just unbelievable. I was lucky enough to work with him, and of course, Dan and my dad, all Hall of Famers. And that has its moments of being trying too, if you're just a regular guy working all those greats. But Knoll really set the tone. And you had my dad; he was like the spiritual type deal there. And Dan was a tremendous business guy. No one was near him, but Knoll was he was the guy. You know,
right?
I remember Sholo told me once. He says, "You know, I don't want you going around thinking you were the guy that." Did all that stuff. He says, it was Chuck. And I said, I think you're right. But he didn't know that I really did think.
Shula told you that.
Yeah, he told me that. That wasn't too long ago, about 3 years ago. But he was right, and I think I agreed with him.
Quickly to the phones. Joe, you're on News Radio 1020, KDK.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Rooney, just a quick question. I'm going to age myself. I'm going to be 50 in October. But years ago, back in the, I'm going to say, mid-70s, your dad used to come to the Meadows racetrack dressed like he was going to meet the president. Your dad always was probably one of the best-dressed people I ever saw come to the racetrack. He used to come to the racetrack and have dinner, naturally play the horses, and he came with, I'm going to assume, a companion or a driver, gray-haired fella, short gray hair, glasses,
and
occasionally there was a priest who came along with him. Whatever happened to those, I'm assuming they probably also passed on. I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer.
Yeah, Richie, and by the way, Richie's made my book here. He was a great friend of my dad's, and he was a driver for the press, the Pittsburgh Press. It was the Post-Gazette, please forgive me. And he was a great guy, really a good guy and a tough guy. I remember we were playing up in Cleveland one time, and he had driven came up with my dad and Governor Lawrence and some people, a couple guys, they ended up being drunk, and they got on Governor Lawrence, a lot of terrible insults to him. And I had just come into the box there because I was going to sit somewhere else and just horrible and went on and on. And Richie said to me, he said, "Give me your binoculars." He got my binoculars, and he jumped up, and he told those two guys, he said, you shut your mouth, he says, or you're going on. How many, Kevin, how many stories did that Cleveland stadium, about six stories?
Yes, sir, yeah.
He said, I'm going to take both of you. He said, you're going to be wearing these binoculars, you know, for the face, right in your face. He says, and I'm going to throw you over, you know, down this. Boy, those two guys left, and they never came back.
Oh, that stadium was built in 36?
Yeah, that was a WPA job. But Richie was a phenomenal guy and a good guy, really a good guy. My dad was so lucky. He had a knack for getting friends like Richie Easton.
Mr. Rooney, finally, a lot has been written about the team. What do you think is going to happen?
The team's going to be here in Pittsburgh, you know, for, well, at least 26 years. I'm not going to be around for that. You'll be around to see that, but... And, you know, it's going to be, the Steelers aren't going anywhere, you know, and, you know, these are very sad days for us. I have a number of people say, what was your dad thinking? I said, my dad would be very sad about the whole situation we're in, and it'd be very understanding, too. You know, it's just one of those things that it's a situational type thing. You know, the league has their roles. Part of my family makes their living from the racetracks. That's my dad knew racing. He knew, you know, the sports business, and you know, three of them went to work in the racing business, and two of us in the football business. And you know, but they have their roles that you can't be in this type of gambling that you now have to have at the racetracks to stay in business. You know, the casino type gambling, and then they also have the ownership roles that have to be followed. And then the other situation is we're all pretty much old fogies now. And, about 10 years ago, we all got these estate lawyers, and we didn't pay any attention to them. And 10 years later, you look, you're 76 and 73 and 71 and 70, and the same for the wives. You know, it's a sort of a miracle where we have five wives, and they're all the same girls we all started out with. You know, and you know, now that has become meaningful, you know, the state's situation. And it's not a lot of fun, you know, but we're trying to do the right thing. But Pittsburgh's going to be okay. Well, I don't know if the Rooney family's going to be okay.
I was going to ask you, will the Rooney family be okay?
I was born in 1935, and the dad started the team in 33. And I know we just had our grandson up at camp, and that's like a ritual of for three generations, the kids just went to camp and worked, picking up dirty underwear and, you know, cleaning out the locker rooms. And the other day, yesterday, in fact, my son came in with all the equipment guys, and we're setting up the dressing room over at Heinz Field. And my son took two of the little kids, a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, and they helped. At least they thought they were helping. They probably were getting in the way, putting the uniforms in the lockers, and, you know, of, you know, Parker and, you know, Heinz Ward and that stuff. And then they went out in Heinz Field and running up and down the field, and yet they kind of feel like they own the place. And, you know, so this is very, very trying times for us.
Mr. Rooney, thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming in.
No, I'm glad my voice lasted that long.
You look good. You look good, sir. Kevin Miller, News Radio 1020, KDK.